Hello everyone. Today we're going to be talking about Jean-Francois Lyotard, yet another postmodern Frenchman. Although this one, unlike some of the other people we've talked about this week, kind of likes post-modernity. When I talked about Guy Debord and I talked about Baudrillard, and tomorrow when I talk about Jameson, they all talk about postmodernism or postmodernity as a moment in a stage of history, or is a symptom of late capitalism, something like this. Whereas Lyotard, he actually sees a potential political and even epistemological potential in the postmodern moment, and he, in some ways, championed postmodernity and encouraged thinkers and writers and artists even to go with the flow of the postmodern as opposed to trying to fight against it. I will explain more in a moment. Just before we get going, I'll remind everyone, I do have courses here at the Academic Agency. Trivium is the bestseller. Buy it now, ladies and gentlemen, but let's get back to the lecture at hand. So, the first thing he talks about, what is the postmodern? What is the postmodern condition? Well, the first thing he says is incredulity towards meta-narratives. The postmodern condition is defined above all else by a collapse of belief in the great legitimating stories of modernity. Modernity believed in capital P progress. Modernity believed in emancipation, in absolute knowledge, in liberation through science, liberation through revolution. There are different grand meta-narratives. For example, Christianity was a grand meta-narrative. The idea of the British Empire was a grand meta-narrative. The American Dream was a grand meta-narrative. And no matter how disillusioned people got, modernists, capital M modernists, still held on to capital T truth in one of these forms, in grand meta-narratives. The late 20th century, according to Lyotard, saw these shattered, just like that light refracted in different colours through the prism of the spectrum. So it is in post-modernity, where there is no singular capital T truth anymore. And I would argue that the advent of the internet has actually furthered and accelerated this great fragmentation, this, you know, multiple spectrum, everybody chooses their own truth. It's also been reflected in kind of stranger ways. You know, remember in science, there was a great turn towards chaos and chaos theory, rather than there being the great creator who made the universe, God. Instead, it was the result of random bumpings of atoms somewhere in the universe after something called the Big Bang that happened for some reason. So even the grand meta-narrative of science in itself kind of refracted in this way, because the story that it tells basically tells a story of randomness, of chaos, of, well, yeah, this kind of things just kind of happen. A little bit like, as I've said before, Forrest Gump, who just kind of floats through life. You know, do you remember that film with Kevin Spacey in it, American Beauty, where he keeps on seeing this plastic bag floating? Well, he sees the plastic bag floating. Now, I think the idea is that a lot of normal people would just see a plastic bag, but he is able somehow to see the beauty in it. But it's just a plastic bag, right? Now, this isn't pointing to any grand meta-narrative or any greater truth. It's just kind of his truth. He subjectively experiences the beauty. Okay, and so it was in science, and so it was in art, and so it was across you know, society at large that we kind of went this way. This is what Lyotard is getting towards. He says that the postmodern condition comes about through a crisis of legitimation. The central question is this: knowledge and social institutions once justified themselves by appealing to meta-narratives. Once those meta-narratives lose credibility, a basic question then emerges: by what standard can knowledge and power still claim legitimacy? This is a genuine practical problem, reshaping how universities, states, sciences justify their authority. Now, remember, Lyotard was writing in the 1970s. It's the 2020s now, and I don't think we're any closer to answering this central question. The new criterion in the vacuum left by the kind of lack of belief in grand meta-narratives is performativity. This starts to kind of fill the void. What is performativity? It is efficiency, measurable output, and systemic usefulness. Okay, these things come to replace older appeals to capital T truth or moral emancipation. You might call them higher ideals. Instead, we've got the pure utility of the function. The classical question, what is true, gives way to the technocratic question, what works? Does it work? And why does this matter? Because Lyotard sees performativity as a quietly coercive norm, one that reshapes education, research, public life in its image. Now, it may be sounding so far as if Lyotard is lamenting this fact, that he is lamenting the death of the old grand meta-narratives. But actually, he's saying, look, this is the situation we find ourselves, but in this moment, there is a kind of radical potential. And rather than shrinking from history, we should kind of grasp post-modernity, you know, like by the scruff of its neck. We should take the nettle, as it were, the metal, and basically try to use it to our advantage in all sorts of different ways. Okay, and I will explain some of those ways in a moment. So, drawing on Ludwig Wittgenstein, who has already made a cameo in his praise of Otto Weininger last week. Here's a second appearance from Wittgenstein. Lyotard argues that society is a plurality of language games. And each of those language games has its own rules, it has its own criteria of validity, and its own internal logic. Science, law, ethics, art, all of these constitute distinct games, distinct language games. Now, in each one of these spheres, no universal meta-language exists that synthesizes these disparate kind of spheres of action or to judge them all from above. So there is no one overriding grand meta-narrative or logic to unite science, law, ethics, art, etc., etc. Okay, and again, this is still Lyotard being descriptive. We'll come on to some of the potential that he sees in this in a moment. Now, he says, here you see a basic kind of rejection of consensus as the ideal. Modernity, capital M modernist projects, of which you can include, by the way, fascism, Soviet socialism, Nazism even. All of these were modernist projects, as well as, you know, the American and British variants of modernism as well. All of those saw consensus, a single standard kind of thing that everybody's reaching towards, where everything else converges into one uniform code. they saw that as a good thing. And we've already glimpsed that in some thinkers. Carl Schmitt, who we looked at, for example, in his Ideal State, said, well, actually, you know, we want to eliminate the friend-enemy distinction within society, and we want to have basically everybody on the same page, the elites and the people and the experts and all the different parts of society, all kind of going in the same direction. In modern-day China, they still very much have a consensus model. And this is an ideal of modernity, capital M, modernism. Lyotard says that consensus, when it is imposed on a society, suppresses difference. And the proper political and philosophical aim for the radical is the recognition of heterogeneity rather than homogeneity, heterogeneity, and the active protection of disagreement, preserving difference and disagreement rather than eliminating it, as somebody like a Carl Schmitt would want. And so rather than consensus, we get what he calls dissensus. Obviously, you know, he was writing in French. But you can see there in the, you know, rather than everybody being a node working towards one ideal goal, now you've got these distinct, multiple, different language games which are maintained in their own separate spheres, and the differences between them are protected. And I guess what Lyotard is saying on the end of it, and this is a good thing. Well, it would be horrific to a thinker like Carl Schmitt. Lyotard is saying, actually, this is a good thing. The postmodern condition actually is actually good to have not everybody being on the same page. It's actually good to have all of this difference in society. It's good that there is no one overarching capital T truth, because overarching capital T truth tends towards totalitarianism, it tends towards suppression, it tends towards oppression even. And in a kind of free society, we want all this disagreement, right? So it's actually good to live up to this thing, as opposed to trying to impose one model on all people. He says that with increased computerization and the transformation of knowledge into what we would now call digital form, knowledge is exteriorized. Information technology separates knowledge from the knower, turning it into a storable and transmittable commodity. It now exists as what we would call today data. Or, you know, everybody's now had the experience of talking to an AI, an LLM engine. You're not even talking to a human being anymore, yet this thing seems to impart quote-unquote knowledge. The knowledge, and you pay for it, showing that the knowledge is being commodified. Value is measured by informational utility, displacing knowledge's role in personal formation or the pursuit of truth. You also then get, with this move to computerization, a new set of power relations. Control over data flows becomes the primary axis of political and economic power. And Lyotard anticipates the information economy. Now, obviously, he was writing in the 70s, so he did not quite live to see, or at least I don't think he did, live to see a kind of the full-blown what happened in the age of social media, the internet, AI now, where all of these things that he was talking about really have come to pass. And it's kind of interesting how big and important data has become. I remember working on projects, 15 years ago now, where, big data was going to be the thing. Every company wants to get its hands on, quote unquote, big data and to run big data analytics so that they can have, the dream was to, and I always remember this, they wanted to take a cross-section of a sports crowd, right? You know, the World Cup is on recently. And so you have a shot of the crowd, there's a shot of a crowd. And in the ideal scenario, the big data analyst could, through studying all of the data, so look, there's the cross-section of this crowd here. based on all the information we have, that woman there, well, she is likely to go and try to buy a glass of champagne at lunchtime, so we can target her for the champagne. That fella there is there because he loves football. He can have a pie, right? He's liable to have a pie. This woman here, she's not really into football. She's been dragged along by her partner. Her real interest, she's into fashion, right? And they can basically, the dream of the marketer was to be able to go into that level of granular detail where each and every person in that crowd was an individual with data attached to them, and therefore they could be targeted with specific messaging to buy various goods and services. So, yeah, this has really come to pass and then some. So the postmodern is a condition within modernity, according to Lyotard. Common misreading, according to Lyotard, is that postmodernism is a clean historical break with what went before. That, you know, there was the modern moment and now there's the postmodern moment. And, you know, the phrase postmodern sounds like we have now left modernity and entered into a new thing. Lyotard says, no, the period, it is not simply a period that follows the modern in a tidy sequence. Lyotard says the postmodern is a sensibility and a set of problems. And it is in many ways a response to modernity. Okay, so it presupposes the continued existence in some form of modernity. Now, where this gets tricky is, you know, I was talking about grand meta-narratives. Well, you know, we've lived through various different events, you know, since Lyotard was writing, including, as I've mentioned, death of Princess Diana, 9/11, Iraq War, COVID-19, you know, the whole Donald Trump era, all of these things we've experienced. And all of them have come with a fragmentation of reality, and they've come with not everybody being on the same page. But in those moments, especially COVID, I would say, and the various others, there are times where the state needs to point back to the sources of authority and officialdom. Authority and officialdom. And during COVID, there was very much a kind of reassertion of capital S science as the grand meta-narrative. Or, you know, something like climate change is a grand meta-narrative that everybody's supposed to buy into. And if you don't, you're kind of a heretic. And there are various other grand meta-narratives. If we think seriously for a second, one of my most popular videos here on YouTube, it was kind of like a feature-length film or documentary, if you want. It was multiple different episodes, and then I put them all into one. It was called The Boomer Truth Regime. Well, the Boomer Truth Regime, the Boomer Truth, is a grand meta-narrative. What is the grand meta-narrative of the Boomer Truth Regime? It is that evil Nazis were defeated by the heroic Winston Churchill and other allies, by America and Britain. And that when America and Britain defeated Nazi Germany, they were really ridding the world of a terrible evil. And in the process, the man who died in that war died for our freedom. Okay. Therefore, freedom is one of the highest goods. This is a boomer truth. Also, one of the terrible things that happened during the events of World War II, you know, the Germans, the Adolf Hitler and his cohort, tried to eliminate an entire race of people through genocide, and this should never happen again, hence never again. This is another grand meta-narrative. Also, science and progress to some extent still exist. Now, this is a kind of tricky area for Lyotard, and he doesn't really, as far as I've seen, his analysis does not quite recognize what I'm describing as boomer truth as a grand meta-narrative, and yet it is a grand meta-narrative. What he's saying is modernity continues and it does have its grand meta-narratives that are alive and present today. But post-modernity is a kind of response to it. It is a sensibility that questions grand meta-narratives. And this response, this postmodern response, arises inside modernity once its legitimating narratives begin to fail. It is a system of modernity self-doubt emerging from within rather than after it. Now, this is kind of an interesting area that I don't know if anybody's really written about. I have a book by Norman Finkelstein up there that may come close to doing some of this kind of work. But, you know, and I, in my Boom of Truth series and in the Boom of Truth essay that's in Applied Elite Theory, I do a little bit of this stuff. But was there an attempt to resurrect the new modernism after World War II? And I've often thought about this. I don't know what the answer is, because there's a certain way of thinking that the Boom of Truth narrative, the erection of Winston Churchill as a national hero in this country and of FDR in America, and, you know, the permanent ultimate evil in history is the Nazis, and all of the other things that go along, you know, the veneration of unlimited self-expression and so on and so forth. Well, all of these things are quite capital M modernist, right? Which then makes me wonder, well, you know, the 1960s and the so-called counterculture and the Beatles and so on and so forth, was that a postmodern moment or was that a capital M modern moment? Was that writing the new grand meta-narrative? A question to be asked. I don't know what Lyotard was. I honestly don't know what Lyotard would say. But my reading has always been, actually, there was an attempt to kind of put modernism back together after World War II, to tell a new grand meta-narrative. And actually, it was supremely effective. I've got a book here written by a boomer. In fact, let me just get it. Hold on. This book here by a man called Patrick Alexander. Okay, it's got Donald Trump on one side, and it's got Winston Churchill on the other side, and it's got dear old Queen Elizabeth in the middle. Now, I think that this man, Patrick Alexander, may have self-published this book. I think he self-published this book, yeah. Brought it out himself. Yeah, and the subtitle is The Story of the Baby Boomer Generation. He published it in Florida. This is a British man who moved to Florida at some point in his life. And I can tell you that the entire book, far from being a scathing deconstruction of Boomer truth, the whole book reads like a self-justification of every single Boomer cliche that you can possibly imagine. It is a book-long re-articulation of the grand meta-narrative of our time. And one thing that I'm genuinely curious about is whether Jean-François Lyotard would be able to recognize this as the grand meta-narrative of our time. Now, one thing that very much disappointed me about modern-day so-called academics and intellectuals in the modern university is that they just don't allow themselves this thought. They do not dare to question the grand meta-narrative of our age, despite the fact they're teaching Lyotard. Despite the fact they're immersed in postmodernism, they too, just like our dear old boomer here, do not stray from the reservation of the grand meta-narrative. Those same people that I have in mind here that would not only very much not disagree with a lot of the stuff that this guy says in this book, regurgitating platitudes from the 1960s, platitudes from half-baked mainstream World War II documentaries, and so on and so forth. But also, those same people were among the most docile, most passive, and most conformist and accepting of the official narrative during COVID-19, as an example. The grandest test in our lifetimes of, you know, whether you truly do stand with power or outside power. And almost all of those people were very much with power. And I wonder if Jean-François Lyotard, were he with us today, what he would have made of all of that. Would he have been able to understand what I'm saying? Would he have been able to deconstruct the grand meta-narratives of today? I would say, given that he came up with this concept, we should give him the benefit of the doubt that Lyotard, if he was with us, would have been saying the same things as me. But hard to say. But it's a question to be asked. So, if universal meta-narratives are no longer credible, how do we think justice can come about, right? What is the basis of justice in our society? Lyotard's answer is that we have a justice of multiplicity that respects the distinct rules and different language games of each distinct sphere and resists the impulse to impose a single totalizing standard on all of them. Justice thus becomes local, contextual, and necessarily pluralistic. This marks a sharp departure from a thinker like Habermas, for whom universal community of reason remains the basis for legitimate justice. Now, one can only imagine what a thinker like Peter Hitchens, if he was watching this, would be saying, "No, you damned Frenchman, it's over. How dare you try to take away the universal code of justice? You start treating different groups of people differently in society based on their own pluralistic laws and codes and values, and you don't have a society anymore. You end up with absolute abominations like the McPherson inquiry and, you know, two-tier policing and things like that," which is where some of these ideas went. So on this one, I think I'm probably with Hitchens that it's not a good idea to have differential law based on the fact that different groups have got different quote-unquote truths, different standards. You can't have a law like this. So this is one of the more bonkers ideas that Lyotard has, if you ask me. So Lyotard also returns to Immanuel Kant and his concept of the sublime, or the transcendent, if you want to put it that way, that which overwhelms our capacity to present or contain it within existing forms. So, you know, in the 19th century, Kantians and romantics of all sorts, really, transcendental idealists, love to talk about the sublime, awe-inspiring experiences. You see a mountain and it takes your breath away. Or if you ever go to one of the massive cathedrals in Rome, and I remember going to Rome once, and you're in this cathedral and you look up and you see just the huge, you're in this huge room and it's awe-inspiring. It's obviously designed to fill you with a feeling God is here, you know. And Lyotard actually comes back to this idea and he says that postmodern art, if it's done properly, bears witness to that which cannot fully be shown. It is unrepresentable, and it is a reminder that exceeds every available form. The task of the postmodern artist, according to Lyotard, is to gesture towards that which resists capture. So this is something that is beyond representation. Now, this led to a whole lot of postmodern art that many conservatives despise. I don't want to get into the whole postmodern art debate, right? But it did lead to a whole lot of art, you know, because what they were all trying to do was present the unpresentable, to get, you know, gesture towards something that actually is beyond human capability of capturing. Okay, so you then get a lot of conceptual art and a lot of art that is quote unquote breaking boundaries. Okay, Lyotard was very excited by this idea, and these, so you're starting to see now in these last bits, the justice idea, his art idea, how Lyotard says, like, look, we find ourselves in the postmodern condition, but this is something that we can have fun with. This is something that we can embrace. This is something that doesn't necessarily be a bad thing. It's a good thing. You watching this can, you know, you can make your own minds up as to whether you agree with Lyotard or not. He says that postmodernity is a war on totality. Let us wage a war on totality, says Lyotard. Let us be witnesses to the unpresentable. Let us activate the differences between people. The ethical and political imperative of postmodern thought is to resist every system, every narrative or identity that seeks to absorb difference into a single whole. Thought must remain experimental, open, unwilling to close itself into a final answer. Now, again, I don't want to come across as I'm against Lyotard here, because I think, if we go back to my little thought experiment, what if Lyotard was here? What would Jean-Francois Lyotard have made of, for example, of the woke? I think Lyotard would have been very, very staunchly against the woke. The woke is an attempt to impose a total system on everybody else. It is totalitarian in nature. And I think Lyotard would have been like, no, we don't do that. You don't get to do this, wokesters. You're just bringing back bad old forms. It's a new stupid grand meta narrative that you guys are trying to come up with. We must, as post, you know, as the flag bearers of postmodernity, reject this. Now, there's probably all sorts of Lyotard scholars who disagree with me, but they're wrong. And I think that'll do. So just a kind of quick march through Lyotard today. Now, it was necessary for me to tackle Lyotard. Cards on the table, I think he is the least interesting of the four thinkers that I'm looking at today, even though he has some good, I think the basic idea of the grand meta-narrative and the postmodern response to modernity is conceptually sound. I just disagree with some of his optimism about it. I disagree with his, I don't know. I just don't, I mean, we've kind of seen how it's gone, basically. I disagree with his ideas about justice and things like that as well. But it is necessary to understand Lyotard if we are to truly understand Frederick Jameson, who I'm going to look at tomorrow, who also talked about the postmodern condition in this kind of more Marxist lens, as being a kind of moment that we're trapped within, and this is not necessarily a good thing. Okay, it's not, you know, so whereas Lyotard was more celebratory and he saw it as, he actually championed the postmodern in a way that Jameson and I would also argue Lyotard, Baudrillard and Guy Debord did not champion it in the way that Lyotard did. But I did want to put forward one, you know, kind of slightly balls out postmodern thinker in the suite this week. We don't have to agree with everybody that we cover. That is the whole nature of intellectual activity. And Lyotard, if he was watching this, would be like, yes, that's the right spirit. It's good. You shouldn't try to impose one big capital T truth. It's actually good that we have all these different differences and that we can kind of agree to disagree. Isn't that right, Lyotard? All right. Pick up a course at the academic agency, and I'll see you all tomorrow.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.